Good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and for the next 2 hours, we can talk cars and motorhomes and horse trailers and tires and tire inflation. And my husband and I argue about this, and my brother and I argue about that. And I just wrecked the car, and I want to fix it before my wife sees it. All those kinds of questions. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. Daryl's been waiting. He called in early, and so I'm going to take him right off the bat. Daryl, good morning. How can I help you?
Well, thank you. I've got a problem. I went to a doctor's office about 2 weeks ago, and I've got an 04 Infiniti G35 kind of low to the ground, and I accidentally ran up on a curb about halfway up. So I backed it right off, finished my appointment, went home. And then on the 11th, my engine light came on, and the car started running rough. I had noticed at some point a little oil on the garage floor. So I went up to one of your preferred service people, but I won't mention them by name because they're going to look at it this coming Tuesday and really get into it, see if they can find out what's going on. But I figured so I'd shoot some questions at you.
Sure.
Since then, it's been kind of erratic as far as how it's been running. I did see them a few days ago, and they ran some codes when it was running rough. They think it possibly the number six cylinder's running, misfiring. But beyond that, they really would have to spend some time into it. But sometimes it's running good. Sometimes it's not running good. Like last night, I went out to see a friend at a restaurant, and it was running fine, but the engine light was on. Then when I went home, the light was off, and it was running good. So it's kind of erratic. And I thought any thoughts that you might have on this whole thing. Now, they did put some dye in with the oil, and they're going to use an ultraviolet light to see if they can find out where that oil leak was coming from. But beyond that, they're stumped a little bit, but they're willing to spend some time at it. But I figured I would throw the idea at you and see if you have any suggestions whatsoever.
No, I think what we've got here is you're asking lots of questions that I don't even have the answers to. And the answers are going to be after it's fixed. So I don't understand the relationship, or I don't understand why we're thinking that an oil leak is going to be, you know, related to a cylinder misfire code. I don't know.
No, it was just the symptoms.
I'm sorry?
It was just one of the symptoms.
Oh, okay. If it's got a cylinder misfire code and it points to a specific cylinder, then at the very minimum, I think most all of us would swap spark plugs first, clear the code, and go drive it. And then maybe swap. Now, you may have coilover ignition where the coil sits on top of the spark plug. Then you'd swap coils. Or you'd swap spark plug and coil with five and put five back and see if it moves to five. And then you still got to figure out if this is the spark plug or the coil.
Yeah.
But this isn't really that hard. It shouldn't be that hard. But the problem is that clearly it's intermittent. And
it's off and on. It's like you can't predict when it's going to run rough or when it's going to run fine.
Right.
It's really weird.
And it has to be running rough when you're dealing with it.
Basically why I brought it back to them the other day when it was running rough. I thought, have them check it. And their main mechanic, he ran the thing on there, and he said the best he can come up with is the number six cylinder was misfiring. But then other times it would run good. Like when I brought it in the other day and was running good, they didn't see any codes at all.
Well, the code
is kind of weird.
The code is a history snapshot.
Yeah.
So, no, you're assuming that in some cases the oil, the light comes on immediately, but don't force them to start chasing their tails on this, because it makes no difference if it's running good, whether there's a code, not code, whether check engine light's on. When it's running good, it's running good. The computer looks and sees a problem, and the computer will then said, I'm going to wait till this problem reoccurs X amount of times, and God knows what that number is. No one really knows that number. And it won't turn off the light until after I've seen it okay for some period of time. And sometimes it's a drive cycle. So the computer needs to see the car cold and then warm up. Cold and then warm up, and then I don't see the problem, and then we'd be done.
Yeah, well, that's the diagnosing, but I'm just wondering, and I'm just kind of thinking out loud right now, driving up on the curb, obviously the car flexes a little bit,
No.
And maybe something
you're
in
chasing your tail. No. You're chasing your tail. There's no way I'm going to let you direct this repair because by the time we get done at, you know, whatever their hourly rate is, by the time we get done, we could have $600-$800 worth of labor chasing our tails. You follow the industry approved procedures, and part of that is talk to the symptoms, check the tailpipe, check fuel pressure, and swap some parts back and forth, especially when it's a cylinder misfire. Run a compression test on 5 and 6, blah, blah, blah. Now, at the end of the day, then you can turn around and say, is this related to anything that where he hopped the curb? There's no ignition components underneath there on the front. And there's no way that you're going to hit the lower crank pulley and damage the crankshaft sensor and only have one code, if it ever started again, for that matter. So
it's been starting up fine. I haven't had any problems there.
Okay, my point, though, is that the thing up in front of the car where you may have damaged it is the front crankshaft pulley, and the crank sensor is adjacent to that. So if you destroy the crankshaft pulley, then it won't start. So it doesn't, and it's not going to just be able to ding six cylinder. I don't know. Only thing I can tell you is if you're uncomfortable with the performance level, and a lot of times you can't fix what's not there when you're looking. So we're not going to fix things based on codes. You can have a code, but if the car's running good and running smooth and it's got a number six cylinder, then, again, most of us are going to swap 5 and 6 and send you out the door. Most of us are going to may swap the coil or the coil wire. Now, I'm thinking one coil per cylinder. So you got a coil, you got a little boot, rubber boot, and then you got spark plug. We can take that whole assembly and just swap them. And so
they had actually done that service about 2 months ago, and they did the engine oil and the transmission fluid, and they actually did swap out all the spark plugs and the boots at that time. But obviously something has happened when I ran up on that curb. And
I gotta go. Darryl, I'm not gonna argue with you anymore. If you continue to focus on you hitting the curb, then prepare to pay the price. It's crazy. That's just not the way it's done. That's not the way it's done. Gotta go. 602-508-0960. Folks, it's a bad idea for you to tell your shop what to do. It's a bad idea. You have no idea how complex some of these problems can be. But if we've got somebody sitting in the background just telling us, you got to do this, and you got to check why I did this, and you got to, and then on Thursday, the right window went down, and then the rearview mirror falls out of adjustment, and I know it's related to the oil leak at the engine. You can't do that. Give them the symptoms, find out what their diagnostic fees are, and from there you go. That's it. Strictly Diesel, which is not a place that this car is going to be at. Strictly Diesel Service and Repair is owned by Nate. Nate's a friend of mine, as are all the shop owners I talk about. They're really good guys. Nate's unusual in this respect. It's very difficult to answer every call and have discussions every day. It's kind of like having a 10-hour radio show. You're just on the phone talking about car and car problems, discussing those issues and the what-ifs and whatever. But Nate will do that. So if you have a diesel question with your Chevrolet 6.6 or your any one of your Fords from the 6 liters up to the 6.7 liters or to that to the Dodge, the 6-liter or the 5.9, any of those kinds of things, Nate will talk to you for a short period of time. They talk, and Nate will want to talk to symptoms as well. So he's Strictly Diesels. He has websites open, of course, 24 hours a day, and they sell lots of parts, and parts that are going to enhance the performance of your diesel. But if you want to talk about diesels and you want to take a little bit of his time, then call Strictly Diesel and ask him your question, and he'll be happy to help you. He's also located at I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road in Scottsdale. I met Nate a long time ago, and he's just, first of all, he's a mountain of a man. He's like 6'6", 6'7", he's got hands like tennis rackets. And so that frightened me right there because I didn't want him to slap me upside the head for fear that he'd knock my head to Bisbee, Arizona. But he's not that kind of a guy anyway. He's just really good. So the shops that I talk about are shops where I know the owner, and we have one another's cell phone numbers. And my promise to you is if you go to one of those shops and you have a problem, and later on some dispute resolution organization, like the Better Business Bureau, finds that the shop did something wrong and should make a refund, then if the shop makes a refund, everything worked like it's supposed to. But if the shop refuses to make the refund, then I do two things. Number one, I kick the shop off the list immediately. And number two, up to $5,000, I'll write the check. So you're covered. You're covered by two, the dispute resolution process as well as me. So that's how it works. But we've never had anybody been removed for that kind of thing, and I'm pretty proud of that because this list has been going on since 1988 when we first started doing radio in the Valley, 1988.
2 minutes.
602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Here's another good example of I tried to do this, and now I'm going to bring you the mess I've made. Okay, I'm just going to read you this part of the work order. Dear so-and-so, or it doesn't say really that, but it says, the customer says, check to see if we can remove the broken spark plug in the cylinder head, and there's also an easy out stuck in there. Now, an easy out is a device that you can drill a hole into something that's broken, like a head bolt or a bolt inside the motor block. You can drill a hole in the center. You can put this easy out in. Then you can work the easy out counterclockwise and bring the broken piece out. It's an easy out. So the spark plug in this motor, the spark plug was stuck. So somehow or another, the middle of the spark plug, which is called the porcelain, has been destroyed. So somebody put an easy out inside what was left of the spark plug and tried to bring the old piece out and couldn't. So it ends up on our door. The answer, this is what we wrote down. We first removed the easy out that was stuck in the spark plug. We used the correct easy out, and we were able to work the broken spark plug back and forth and bring it out. We thought the damage would probably be or the threads would be damaged. So we ran a tap in and out of there after we got the broken pieces and all that stuff out of there. Then we ran the tap back and forth. We blew out the cylinder. We vacuumed the cylinder to make sure there was no metal left inside. We installed a new spark plug, and we went and drove it, and everything was fine. The I tried but couldn't was $225. It would have been half that much if we didn't have to get the old bad part out and the wrong easy out before we could get the right one in and get the old spark plug out. So just kind of be careful. And all you wives are laughing right now, and you're looking at your husbands and probably driving down the road and smiling. And yes, we've never had a woman do this. Somebody just brought that in. It's usually some hairy-chested guy. Anyway, 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. We'll be right back. Well, it's 20 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and let me tell you about a shop up in North Phoenix that I've always been really proud of, as I am all the shops that I tell you about. Kurtz Auto Repair at I-17 and Bell Northeast Corner. Been around since 1987, and I've known Kurt since then. Kurt and Eric, which is the number one tech at Kurt's shop, well, he's actually the number two tech because Kurt's number one. But nevertheless, between the two of them, they can repair domestic and import vehicles, gas and diesel, and just about everything imaginable. They're all ASC certified technicians, and they're well trained and well certified. So if you're in that area and you don't have an auto repair shop, or you want to try somebody new, then Kurtz Auto on the northeast corner of I-17 and Bell. Bob, thanks for holding. How can I help you?
Hi, Mark. If somebody brought in their own brake pads and rotors for a brake job, would you be agreeable to that or no?
No. Here's what happens. I'm going to say it happens a third to a half of the times. You install it. Now, you don't know why we're doing this. You're assuming that the brake pads are worn down to nothing or they're metal to metal or whatever. There's some reason that oftentimes they don't share that with you. So you put the brake pads on. And then now they come back and they go, I have a brake pedal pulsation I didn't have before. Well, because I put their pads and shoes on, the only way I can blame it on the pads and shoes is to go through a complete diagnostic procedure and figure out why the pulsation's there, which is actually bad wheel bearings, or somebody put the rotor on top of a piece of gravel. So I have to do a bunch of work to prove that what I did isn't the problem or is the problem. And then the information on why we're where we're at today is almost never shared. Almost never. So you say, okay, well, why are we doing brake pads? Let's just do. I know, but does the brake pedal pulsate? Does it squeal in the mornings or on light braking? Does it make any noise? Can you give me, I don't know if it's my husband's car. He just said, hey, put these pads in. So if he still has the problem at the end of the day, then he's going to say, well, you didn't do it right because I still have the problem. And I'm saying, well, wait a minute, we're working off of your diagnosis. So I didn't have a diagnosis in here. You didn't pay me for any of that. So your brake pulsation, if you still got it, then you still got it. We used to install the pads, I know, but I didn't cut the rotors and I didn't true them up and I didn't run runouts on all the axles and stuff. So no, I didn't do that. I did what you said. So Bob, now I don't speak for all the shops in the world. There are people that will install customer parts, but I tell you what, I'm not doing an O2 sensor, and I'm not doing an injector, and I'm not doing a cam follower. I'm not doing anything to do with the electronic timing, because people will get on Google, and Google, this guy that knows everything in the world about car repair, is going to tell them how to fix the car. They buy it, bring it to me. It doesn't fix the car, and the war is on. And then they stop payment on their credit card. So, yeah, that's my sob story. Did I convince you?
What if somebody wanted ceramic brake pads installed because they didn't want to have dust on their wheels, you know? But you knew the shop was marking them up like 500% over what they were paying?
Okay.
Because you wanted ceramic pads?
Okay. I'll take that one. First of all, 500 is just an effort to sensationalize the issue. But I agree with you. Some people would call it offensive, the parts markup we make. But I want to tell you something. 30% is the net after 22 years of business. 30% on parts. And I have to warranty them. I have to look them up. I have to warranty them. And then I have to replace them for free and replace the part for free and do the labor for free. So I think 30% on my parts is a favorable number. I don't do many warranties and I don't do that a lot of that stuff, but that's it. Now, some other guys are going to brag about 40 and 50%, and some guys are stupid enough to brag about 100% profit, which means you bought a part for $30 and you sold it for $60. The ceramic pads, I wouldn't put them on. I wouldn't put it. What happens if they squeal?
I don't know.
Okay.
Do they squeal?
Well,
I'm just trying to get less dust on my wheels.
Okay. If they do squeal, then what happens? Then what do we? Where do we go from there? So I understand that you're trying to get less dust. I understand ceramics are supposed to handle that. I think what I'd do if I were you is I would find the pads. I would Google all the pads for reviews and see if anybody says this eliminated the dust, or see how many people said it caused a squeal. That would be the investigative technique I would use if I were you. But and then if you do business with a shop, just ask them, if I bring ceramic pads for this reason and this reason only, will you install them for me? And then they may or may not. But let me tell you a story, ironically enough, that you bring up the 500% part markup. I have a Genie boom lift, and I use it to trim high trees up at the ranch. And the other day when I got in and I started it up, there was such a tremendous explosion in the engine compartment, it blew the air filter housing completely off of it. So I've determined that the O2 sensors are both dead. And so I called my parts department, and I said to Jeff, I need you to find me these two. Here's the model number. Here's all the information I think you need. And there are two of them. One of them's got a green plug on it, and one of them's got a black plug on it. I think one's propane and one's gas because it's a dual fuel. He started off with my cost at well over $120. When we finally get the part number, which is important, we Google the part number, and we can order them off Amazon for $32. Now, it's nobody we've ever dealt business for. We don't know if it's been plugged in because there's going to be dielectric in the plug. We don't know a lot of things. Has it ever been installed? Yeah, it's in the box, but is it new? Or is it somebody took it out and put it in the box? We don't know. But there's a significant difference between once we track down the part number and Googling the part number and what we actually paid for it and what we would have sold it if had somebody else had this boom lift. So I don't agree with your 500. It's not uncommon for a shop to mark it up 40%. So if you buy something for a dollar, then he's going to mark it up $1.40 or $100 on $140, that kind of stuff. So now, not 500 isn't close. I mean, there's nothing in Salem's inventory that's even 100% markup. Oh, I take that back. There might be a valve stem that I pay a buck for and I charge $2 for it. There might be one of those, but I can't think of anything else. But that's basically the answer is that you can ask, and it depends. If you're a really good customer and they look in your file and you've never had a complaint and you've never bounced a check, they may very well just raise their hand real quick and say, that's fine. But just do a little research to get the very best. There's 10 different brands available in the Phoenix market, and you can probably find one that you're happiest with. Thank you, Bob. That was a good question. Customer parts is always a good question. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960 is the phone number. If you'd like to ask a car question, you're more than welcome to do it. 602-508-0960.
1 minute.
If you're kind of shy about the radio, you can send me an email, mark@marksalem.com. Mark with a K, mark@marksalem, Salem like the cigarette, .com. I said that to a young lady the other day, Salem like the cigarette. She didn't know what I was talking about. But when I was a kid, I was called Salem Cigarette, and that's the reason why we say Salem like the cigarette. And most everybody with a little gray hair knows what that means. Anyway, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And when we come back, we're going to ask the most important question. If Tesla says that their S model can go 0 to 60 in 2 seconds, then at a top speed of 200 miles an hour, 2 seconds, 200 miles an hour, the answer is why? Why would it be that way? And when are they going to use that? We'll be back. Well, 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. Mark Salem here every Saturday from 10 to 12 talking about car repair and procedures and diagnostic costs and all that kind of stuff. So if you'd like to join us, have a car question, 602-508-0960. Action Auto Repair's up at I-17 in Deer Valley. I've known Tom since 1983. He's capable. He's honest. He's technical. He is strong enough to handle the hairiest chested technician that he may or may not have, and he knows right from wrong. So if you're up there near I-17 and Deer Valley, he's on the northwest corner. Tom is a great full-service family-owned auto repair shop that's been around since 1983, and I met him just before he opened up his own shop. And so I'm pretty proud of these guys because they're still in business, and I can't tell you how many of these how many shops, or you probably many of you know. Okay, 602-508-0960. We had a couple of calls here, and my wife just came into my radio studio, and she used bad words to me. One of the questions was, is the customer, can he bring his own parts? And I said, typically we don't do that. That's not really true, my wife reminds me. At our facility, our repair facility, we have 38,000 customers, and if you have a three-digit customer number, there isn't anything we're going to say no to. Now, we started in 1991 with our software. As a matter of fact, I helped Steve Witzel draw the software up and create the software. So it's patterned after our normal function of car repair. So we have customers with three-digit 999 or less numbers. They can do whatever they want. They can bring us all their parts. It's not uncommon that grandkids would call and say, hey, Grandpa's bringing his truck in for a set of tires. I want to buy tires, or I want to pay for them and have them delivered to your... Hey, that's fine. That's fine. Your grandmother's number is 123. She's been around a long time. And these are customers that continue to do business with us. They're still active, I should say, active. So with respect to bringing in your own oil, bringing in your own parts, stuff like that, then check with your shop. If you are an old-time customer and they look you up on historical stuff and you've never had a complaint, or perhaps you had a couple of questions that didn't turn into a complaint, blah, 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 then it may very well be that the shop will accommodate that request. It's not something I think we want to do on a regular basis, but it is something that my wife reminds me happens at our shop, but with a certain, you know, area of clientele. Keep in mind, we're talking about customers with a customer number of 1,000 or less, and we're at 38,000. I think slowly we're moving that up to the 5,000 range and the 10,000 range and stuff like that, because the repetitiousness of our relationship is really what keeps both of us going. So it's a nice thing to do, and I can say that almost all the shops, without hesitation, treat the old customers slightly different than the new customers, slightly better than the new customers, just because new customers were, you know, it's kind of like we're going to go steady, and then we're going to get engaged, and then we're going to get married. So that's kind of how it works. When it comes to car repair, the real question I would want you to learn how to do is, when you're called with an estimate, just regurgitate the deal you have with the shop. So you're going to spend $312, and I'm not going to have a check engine light with that code on anymore, and my fuel economy is going to return to what was normal as opposed to what it is now, which is terrible. That's okay to have that kind of conversation. You're really putting the shop, you're telling the shop that you're going to authorize the estimate, but you want to make sure that they're not out here in Never Never Land fixing something else when it has nothing to do with the problem that you brought it in for. And all of you have heard of somebody who had that. If not, you've had that yourself. So 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. When we talk about the Tesla claiming that the Model S will do 0 to 60 in 2 seconds at a top speed of 200 miles an hour, a couple of weeks ago I mentioned that. And we had an accident reconstructionist who I've worked with for, gosh, I don't know how many years, 10 years or more. He was a Phoenix policeman. He first rode motors, and then he got deep into the accident reconstruction. And he called, and he said, that's just about impossible, because the friction of the tires would have to be something that I've never seen before. So he says if it has that kind of power, 2 seconds at 200 miles an hour, then the traction would have to be something that I've never seen before. Then another guy called and said, but Mark, at the bottom of that ad, it says specially treated track. So after the radio show, we were all discussing this, and the specially treated track came up with, it had to be stickier than any, like flypaper. And then it had to hold up as this car accelerated from 0 to 200 miles an hour in 2 seconds. And so it's 0 to 60 in 2 seconds and a top speed of 200 miles an hour. So it's really 0 to 60 in 2 seconds, but it has a top speed of 200 miles an hour. So I read it wrong, and I'm sorry, but then again, still 0 to 60 in 2 seconds. It's going to have a specially treated track that's going to be kind of sticky in order to hang that up and may be able to make that happen. Anyway, those are some of the things that we talk about here, and somebody called in and said in Phoenix, if someone actually has their turn signal on, it's been, quote, accidentally activated. That's just kind of funny. And in summertime in Phoenix, if you're new to the area, it's advisable to have some potholders in your car for when you have to steer the car when the steering wheel is in the hundreds of degrees. And in Phoenix, there is a phenomenon in Phoenix like four cars through a red light rule. But you will certainly at some time get acquainted with our unique life on the road. Four cars through a red light rule. Everybody's seen that. And last but not least, customers will often say, I have a bumper-to-bumper warranty. And in the background, we're thinking to ourselves, and you have many, many exclusions. Many, many exclusions. Exclusions that are in your contract that nobody read, and certainly the shop didn't, because they had no responsibility to read it, but neither did you, but said, if you're going to complain about a power steering hydraulic fluid failure or any component that's bathed and lubricated by the fluid, you have to show annual flushes of your power steering system. So while your power steering system is covered, you have to flush it annually, which is a crazy idea. So, but if you don't flush it annually and you don't have the receipts to flush it annually, then it will not be, that's not a claim that they're going to pay. So just kind of be careful about the aftermarket warranties. If there's one part of car repair that I hate, one of the top three is aftermarket warranties, because we're the bad guys, because we have to deliver the bad news. And oftentimes when we get somebody to come out there, and this person doesn't have the technical skills to even just take our cars to the car wash, much less change the oil or diagnose something, but yet that person's out there telling us how to fix your car. And or saying that the fact that this black smoke is coming out of the tailpipe is not related to the fuel delivery system. Right. So nevertheless, those are the kinds of things that we struggle with. 602-508-0960. 44 minutes after the hour, 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. This is a car show. But every once in a while we stray a little bit, and sometimes I get in trouble and sometimes I don't. But right now I'm going to talk about Auto Dynamics in Sun City. It's been around since 1982. I've known Chuck, the owner, since before that. And so if you call me and you say, hey, Mark, would you guide me to a good repair shop in Sun City? I'm going to guide you to Sun City's largest and most trusted source. That's Auto Dynamics, and they're on the north side of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue. North side of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue. Nick, good morning. How can I help you?
Mark, I got a question for you. I bought a 21 Colorado 2.8 diesel last Memorial Day weekend. Would you do the oil changes as per what the computer says, or at least until the warranty is up?
The answer is you can do it two ways. Is it a 0-20 oil they're calling for?
I think it's 5-20.
Okay. If it's a synthetic, that's a 10 to 15,000 mile oil change interval. And I want to tell you,
it's full synthetic, and the computer's been saying to change it at about 7,100, 7,200 miles.
Okay.
Because it comes up the life of the oil that's...
Now, are we sure we reset the computer and told it we did an oil change?
Yeah.
Okay. I'd go by the door sticker. If you're going to be really good on door stickers, I go by the door sticker. I have the same kind of issue. I have a 2012 Dodge truck, a diesel, and it's got a 15,000-mile oil in it. I'm using a 0-20. It's a full-line synthetic. And my monitor will come up. And I think my owner's manual, I could be wrong, but I think my owner's manual is going to call for a 10 or a 12,000. But I know the oil will go 15,000. And so I usually go 14 or 15, so the light does come on prematurely. I don't reset the light. I just leave it alone until I do the oil change, and then I reset the light at the same time I put a new door sticker. But most of the time, my shop is now putting the door sticker in the upper left-hand corner of the windshield, and that is an easy way for people to say, okay, the light comes on. Oh, I'm only 200 miles away from what Salem says to do, or I'm only 2 months away from what Salem says to do, my next oil change. You're not going to get hurt either way. You can do it at 7,100, but it's kind of a waste of a good oil, because that oil is good if it's a full synthetic, and there's nothing harmful, and I've never seen anybody had a problem that anyone could truthfully blame on the fact that they didn't that they changed their synthetic oil at 12,000 instead of 14 or 15.
Yeah, because do you think the factory can put in the computer to judge how good the oil is, or are they going by the temperature of the engine, how many times you hit a heat cycle? Because it doesn't just say, oh, you need to change your oil. It'll count down from 100%. And then the first change I had to do, when it got down to like 7%, I mean, I started getting all kinds of emails, text messages, your oil's down to 3%. You need to change it.
Okay, well then, you signed up to a process that I refused to.
And yeah, it just basically came with the vehicle until for the first 6 months.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't get those.
I don't want anybody monitoring my driving habits. My wife does that just fine herself. And yeah, there's an airbag module in there that'll tell him how Mark died when he crashes his truck or whatever. That just gripes the heck out of me. You have no idea about the technical ability of some of the new cars today, where people can actually listen to the conversations going on inside the car. There's hackers that can get a hold of that system. It's just an unbelievable thing. Yes, I believe 100% that we have the capability of determining when your oil has seen its last day. We know the temperature of the ambient temperature. We know the temperature of the engine. We know the humidity. We know the airflow. We know if it's cold air coming into the engine or hot air. We know all the heat cycles, one of the things that you remember. We know how you drive the throttle. Are you a jackrabbit driver? Are you on the throttle real heavy? Or are you an 80-year-old grandmother with a cold beer between her legs and she doesn't want to spill it? We have all of that information. We know how long each drive was and how hot you got the motor. We know if the oil got hot. We know if the cooling system reached maximum cooling or maximum temperature. We know all of that. So to answer your question, I am 100% convinced that that computer has the ability. I think it's in everyone else's best interest, not mine as the owner of the car, to change the oil when the manufacturer of the oil says you should, as opposed to the car. Because I would like it very much if everybody went back to a 3,000-mile oil change, because I would be able to bite your wallet for every 3,000 miles instead of every 12 to 15,000 miles. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So you don't think they would, like if I went 10,000 miles, you don't think they would void my warranty or anything, correct?
They wouldn't know. They may know now, but they're not going to know after the 6 month if you don't sign up for the watchful eyes
right.
of whoever. No, they can't. And I deal with those kinds of issues as a professional and as an expert. But if you've got a work order and your oil changes are done and you're done with not a brand but a weight of oil that fits in the owner's manual, you're home free.
Okay.
They want you to think they. The car manufacturers, the car makers, and certain garages, auto repair garages that I'm well aware of, they want you to believe that, but Chevron is going to step up in front of you. So is Valvoline. So is all the big heavy hitters, the Shell, the Motorcrafts. And, you know, Motorcraft doesn't make their own oil. General Motors doesn't make their own oil. There's only four companies in the world that make oil, or four companies for the United States: Mobil, Shell, Phillips 66, and Chevron. Those guys make everybody's oil. So, no, you just keep your records. That's what's most important.
Okay. I drive a lot. I'm the guy that had the 800,000 on the 06 Colorado, 2.85 speed.
Okay, now was that 2.8 a diesel too, or was it a gas?
No, that was a gasser.
Okay, all right.
I splurged and got the diesel.
Oh, okay. Well, it'll be you had 800,000 miles on the gas version of that 2.8?
Now, it wasn't original.
Okay.
I sold it, and somebody seized up the engine at 425.
Okay.
But I have another one, 06, same engine, that it's up to 455,000, and it still runs great.
Okay. The only two reasons we replace engines is they've been overheated, they've been run low on oil, or they died of old age. There's three reasons.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, speaking of overheating, this thing's running at about 205. Do you think that's okay?
Heck yes. Mine runs 220. I want my diesel to be at 220 to 230 all the time. Here's the math. 212, water boils. You with me?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we want to turn the water to a vapor in your engine oil so that the PCV valve will then suck it out of the engine and send it out the tailpipe. The heat cycle means we got it up past temperature to where we can get the water out, because every time you shut the thing off, you get a half a tablespoon of water as the engine condenses the air inside from hot to cold. Water is a huge problem because water and oil equal mud. And mud sits in the bottom of the pan that plugs the screen on the oil pump and causes an oil starvation problem that causes the motor to blow up. So all of this is tied together. That's why we have 195-degree thermostats. That's why we have electric cooling fans, because we can control the temperature better. I get that question asked a lot. I'm telling you right now, I get nervous at about 250, 260. But okay. Anything around 20 degrees plus or minus 20 is fine. I promise you.
Have a good weekend.
Okay, thank you. And here's the deal. the oil, there's three kinds of oil. There's a conventional, a semi-synthetic, and a synthetic. Put your hands in front of you about 6 inches apart. Your left hand represents when it turns to a wax cold. Your right hand represents when it turns from a liquid to a sludge. It oxidizes. It burns the oil up. So conventional oil, your hands are 5 inches apart. Then you got semi-synthetic, your hands are 10 inches apart. And then you got a full synthetic, and your hands are 15 inches apart. 15 inches. Synthetic oil will pour out of the can at 60 below zero. Regular oil won't pour out of the can at 20 degrees. Regular oil turns to a tar somewhere around 280, 300. Synthetic oil turns to a tar at 500 degrees. So synthetic oil, it's never going to turn to a solid on the cold side, and it's never going to turn to a solid on the hot side, because it's in the range that this oil stays oil. That's why synthetics are so far superior. I sell the heck out of synthetics. I'm picking what oil I put in your car when you bring it in for an oil change, unless you have something that you want me to know about. And I'll try to talk you into what the owner's manual says, because the owner's manual is written by the people who made and designed the car you're driving and the car I'm driving. It's just getting past that point of acceptance and getting you into your comfort zone. There's lots of people that change their synthetic oil every 3,000 miles. That is a terrible waste of natural resources. It's just a bad... If you're going to do 3,000-mile oil change, just go to a conventional. Just go to the old-fashioned conventionals. So, and then a semi-synthetic can be at 90-10, can be a 50-50, and they won't tell you. So the big companies, you know, are going to be 50-50. But the idea is that a semi-synthetic can be 90-10 or 50-50. And a full synthetic is the big dog, your car's going to live forever kind of oil, so long as you don't overheat the cooling system and take the oil past its 500 degree point. Because when the oil hits 500, it turns from a liquid to a carbon, a solid, and your motor is going to heaven. But in reality, your motor's going to heaven at 300 degrees no matter what anyway. So when you get them up that hot, then your motor is not going to live for tomorrow. So anyway, we're going to come back for another hour. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960 is the phone number. And if you'd like to join us or have a car question, you're more than welcome to chime in. 602-508-0960. The board operator... His name is, hold on a minute. Is it Jess? Is it Jessica? Who's
it's
the board
Gil.
Op? Oh, I know that. Gil is the board op, and he's the one that runs the show, and he's the one that makes me hit all my marks, suggests I make all my marks. He's the one I've been working with since 2011. And he's a good guy, so he answers the phone, and then you just say, hi, my name is Mark, and I want to talk to Mark about tires, or I want to talk to Mark about an argument my wife and I have, or something like that. And then he'll put you in queue, and then the next thing you'll hear me say on the phone is, hey, how are you? What can I do for you? And I'll call you by your name, because Gil's going to give me your name. So that's kind of how it works. 602-508-0960.
2 minutes.
When it comes to car repair, the thing that I would like you to do is when there's an argument between your husband and the repair shop and your dad, ladies, go to the owner's manual. The owner's manual is written from everybody in Arizona to Death Valley to Alaska to Antarctica, all the different places this vehicle is likely to be. That manual is written for everybody. Now, it is true that the range is quite wide a lot of times, and you can kind of pick where you want to be. But I would suggest that you do what your shop recommends, especially since your shop is the expert. And speaking about shops, there was another shop that was purchased by a big conglomeration group, and the shop, the buildings and the land, the equipment, it was called a walk-away price. Otherwise, we're going to write you a check, and you're going to walk out the door, whoever you are, and I'm not going to tell you who it is, shop owner, and we're going to take over your operation. $5 to $6 million check. Now, if you think for a minute that the prices are going to drop at that facility once it gets... once it gets in the hands of someone who paid that much money for it, so many times earnings, so many times taxes and this and that, and then an appraised value of the property and the building and the debt and all that other kind of stuff. So if it's 5 to 6 million, I think it's a safe bet that the pricing's going to go up in that shop to its customers. So that's happened a lot here. We recently had Sun Devil Auto, 28 shops were purchased. I don't know the financial aspects of that, and I haven't heard anything bad about it, but just be aware that can happen. 602-508-0960. Well, thank you for joining us 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock till 12. We're going to be talking about car and car repair. We have two people on the line, David and Matt. I'm going to get to you in just about 30 seconds. But let me tell you first about Blackwell Automotive. He's up at 40th Street and Greenway. He takes care of that entire northeast section of the valley because I can't find anybody else to help him. I've known Tom for more than 20 years. He is a very talented technician. He's a talented business owner. And he does vintage, lots of vintage car repairs and service and rehab and development and all that kind of stuff. But he also does oil changes for your family car and for your sport utility vehicle and everything else. So everything from engines to oil, everything in between, Blackwell's really good. And he's at 40th Street and Greenway, and he's one of my favorite places up in that, well, he is my best place, the best place I can refer you to up in that northeast area of the valley. Let's go to David. David, thanks for calling. How can I help you?
Hey, good morning, I should say. It's not afternoon yet.
Yep.
I'm wondering, I want to follow up with some of that oil change stuff. I've got an older car. It's a 2002 4Runner with about 260,000 miles. I've always changed it. I've owned it since about 160. I've always changed oil with semi-syn, and probably 3,000 to 5,000 range. But I also do the transmission every year. I put on about 30,000 miles because I blew a transmission out here, and so now I'm paranoid about not having fresh fluids and everything. And I basically haven't dropped the pan and put in a new filter versus reverse flushing because I don't want to, I don't know, I don't like reverse flushing on the old transmission. So what can I switch to synthetic?
Yes, sir.
Even though I've had nothing but semi-syn in there, and would that be good for the engine, et cetera?
Okay, and this is a very popular question, and the answer is really easy. Well, first of all, let me tell you that I'm a trained oil expert both by Valvoline and Chevron. Valvoline back in the 90s and 2000s, and Chevron most recently. So I'm real familiar. The synthetic oil is backward compatible to everything. Everything. Each time we come out with a different kind of oil, we take a step forward. So it's backward compatible. There is no way your engine's going to know synthetic oil from semi-synthetic oil. There's no way. First of all, I'm going to tell you, I cannot find out on a semi-syn what the relationship is between conventional and synthetic. It's a secret.
So it balances, I understand.
Yeah. So I sell the synthetic, semi-synthetic, because that's the middle oil change number. So if you're interested in a number, then I got a low, a medium, and a high. But in your particular case, your motor won't care. There'll be insignificant differences in everything, and nothing will be negative. Everything will be positive. So you're going to enhance its ability, the oil's ability to dissipate heat. You're going to give it the very best lubricating properties and detergent carrying properties you've ever had. And detergent doesn't mean they're scrubbing bubbles. It means the oil will pick up a piece of trash, a piece of carbon, and carry it to the oil filter. That's what detergent means. There's no scrubbing bubbles.
Okay.
So in your particular case, if you're doing a semi-synthetic 3 to 5, you can. Now, do you want to go up and do a 10 to 15,000 mile oil change? Yes, then use a synthetic. And use a comparable weight synthetic that you're using now. You're fine.
Okay. And the transmission changes?
I think you're doing those a little early. I want you to know that I've got most all my customers on 100,000 mile flush and filter. Flush and filter.
Okay.
Now, I'm not worried about flushing it because there are filters in the interim. So when I take the two lines off the radiator and I hook them to my machine, I'm sucking on one, pushing on the other. So I'm pushing clean in and dirty out, and the lines are clear, so I can see that what comes out is brown, but when it turns pink and pretty like the inlet line, whew, I'm done. And so I think you'd be far better off in every way, shape, or form if you'd go to is 30,000 1 year or 2 years or what?
It's about 1 year and a lot of highway and city driving.
Okay. I don't know. You know, in the old days, we used to change transmission fluid every 30,000 miles. And there's a whole lot of people that say that we should still do that. Mark doesn't agree with them. So I want you to know that my truck had 140,000 miles on it. And it's my fault because I had it scheduled at 100, but I couldn't get rid of the truck. I needed the truck. So I just had them flush my transmission, but I should have had it done at 100. And so I'm very – and my truck's a one-ton that I haul horses and I haul tractors and I haul hay. I do all that stuff with my truck. It's not a baby truck in by any shape, by any standard. But I'd like to see you go to an annual or to a 100,000-mile swap, and I would do the flush and the filter at the same time. So I'm going to flush it, and then I'm going to pull the pan and do the filter.
Okay. All right, good enough. That's what I needed to know, sir. Thank you very much.
You bet, Dave. Matt, you're up next. How can I help you?
Morning, Mark.
Good morning.
I'm getting ready to put trailer tires. Is there any recommendation? It's a 15-inch tire. Do they make – I've heard sometimes you've recommended truck tires, 10-ply, 12-ply, or whatever.
Well, it all depends on the trailer. How many axles are on the trailer?
It's a dual.
Okay, and what's the gross weight of the trailer?
Empty, probably 4,500.
Loaded?
Loaded, probably about 55 to 6,000.
Okay,
it's only a 20-footer. It's pretty small.
Okay, so let's pretend it's 8,000. So you have four tires, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so all you have to do is whatever tire you got on there, all you have to do is make sure that its maximum load is more than 2,000 pounds. That's all. That's all you got to do. Now, a trailer tire has a pretty strict mile per hour on most trailer tires. And so if you're going to be traveling north of 65 miles an hour on a regular basis, like I do with my horse trailers, then I have truck tires on my horse trailers, but I need the truck tire because I got four big fat horses in this trailer, on this two-axle trailer. So I'm hauling a lot more weight than you are. But if your gross is going to be 6,000, let's move it to 8. Now you got a 2,000-pound passenger car tire or light truck tire, and that's going to give you the 65 mile an hour and a little bit north of that speed. If that makes sense. Because the trailer tire is not designed for that highway speed.
Right. Okay, so you can put a light truck tire?
Yeah, I do all the time.
Now, does a ply make a difference when it says 8-ply, 10-ply, 12-ply?
No, you'd never put an 8-ply or a 10-ply or a 12-ply on an 8,000-pound load. Gosh, those are on my... Those 10-plies are on Clifford, my semi-truck, where each tire is 8,000 pounds. Because if I'm hauling 80,000 pounds and I got a 10-wheeler, I better have an 8,000-pound tire times 10 underneath 80,000 pounds. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Yeah. I just heard about plies. I didn't know that heavier.
Just go by what it says. Maximum load at this PSI. The maximum load, and then you're going to carry those trailer tires at the maximum load all the time, so you bounce off curbs and bounce through potholes and all that other kind of stuff. So, and besides, a trailer that has fully inflated tires on it to the maximum is going to tow better. The fuel economy for the pool vehicle is going to be better. Everything is better, plus the tire runs cooler when it's fully inflated. All the trailers I have, all my quad trailers, my horse trailers, my equipment trailers, my wife's junk trailer, all that stuff, they're all run at maximum inflation. They all have passenger car tires with the exception of my semi is called Clifford. And him and his trailer all have big truck tires on it, and my horse trailer has big truck tires on it. So, because I have four horses. It's a four-horse trailer. So that's how it is. But in your particular case, you could get by with a passenger car tire. Just run at maximum inflation and make sure the load of the four tires exceeds the load they're going to carry.
Now, would the warranty still stand, you know, for a passenger car tire? I mean, if it says it's rated for say 40,000 miles.
Well, it's all prorated, and first of all, that's a joke because we're going to prorate it to our benefit. So, you know, 50% of the tire and blah, blah, blah. Road hazard is road hazard. Unless you buy the road hazard, you're not going to get road hazard warranty or an adjusted tire. And if it's a workmanship issue, it's prorated too. So those are the kinds of things you're up against. The last thing in my world that I'm worried about is the tire warranty. I like brand names, and I like to go a little bit more than I need. If I have a 10,000-pound trailer, I probably put 12,000 pounds of tires underneath it. That's how I think.
Okay. Okay, Mark, great show. Thank you very much, and have a great Thanksgiving.
Yeah, and thank you for that. Thank you, and I'm looking forward. You know what I'm going to do this afternoon, Gil? I'm going to go out to the Tough Shed and pull all the quads out so that I can fire them all up, because the last time anybody drove them was when the grandkids came up last year. And it'll take me the better part of a half a day to air up all the tires, to add fuel to them, and put a little fuel stabilizer to get them running. And then I'm going to go. Now, you can imagine I'm a slim trim, 205 pounds, and I'm going to sit on a 50cc four-wheeler that my grandkids ride when they're really young, and with helmets and with jackets and with gloves and all the safety devices. And I'm going to be zipping up and down the forest roads sitting on this motorcycle that one guy could pick up and put in the bed of a truck. But I have to warm it up, you know, and get it ready for the grandkids so it'll start. And so that's what I'm going to be doing for the next couple of days, is just getting all the quads ready for all the grandkids. Nevertheless, 602-508-0960 is the phone number, 602-508-0960. If you'd like to join us, you certainly can. You can call anytime you want. Gil answers the phones. He'll ask you what your name is, and then he says it in my ear. He'll say the next caller is Fred, and so then I'll go to Fred. So him and I are both looking at the same clock, and, of course, I have specific times that I need to be out and take a break. So like 17 minutes after the hour, that's kind of flexible. So I can do that whenever I really want, and Gil doesn't use bad words. But at the 30, at the bottom of the hour, 30, I need to be out at 30. Not 31, not 30, 30, but 30. Then 40, 58, 58's the top of the hour. Then we start it again, 17, 30, and 40. So that's kind of how it works. But Gil's job is to keep me in order, and he says some terrible things in my headphones sometimes that would cause any religious person just to drop their head and pray for him. And that's what happens a lot of times. But then again, I've been called worse before, and nothing I've said is the truth. And we'll be right back. Well, it's 21 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. We're going to be here till noon talking about car and car repair issues. You're welcome to join us, 602-508-0960. And, of course, 0960 represents 960 The Patriot, KKNT. So 602-508-0960. You have a car question, Gil's going to ask you what your name is, and he's going to whisper in my ear. Ben's on the phone, and I'll take you, and we'll get past that. For right now, though, let's talk about Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing in Mesa. Folks, I would love to have two or three shops in each city. The problem is it's hard to find, and the filter I use is quite fine. And so Thompson's is the only shop in Mesa that I can tell you to go to. It's just that others have applied, but perhaps maybe they didn't have the years of service I wanted. Perhaps they had difficult reviews that were all price-related that bothered me. Perhaps the owners weren't on site every day, or at least 4 days a week, or something like that. Well, Thompson's is just a great shop, and they've been around a long time. And even more important than that, both Brian and his wife, their families have been in the gas station business since the 60s. And when I came out of high school, I worked for their families. And so I've known those young Brian and his wife Thelma for a very long time. So I can tell you they know what to do. They've been around the block. They've seen their father with grease under his fingernails from the time they were the smallest of the small. So if you're interested, they're on Main Street in Stapley, Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. And in my opinion, it's the best shop in Mesa. And who might be on the phone, Gil?
Say hello to George.
George, good morning.
Good morning, Mark. hey, I sort of got a strange issue. I got a 2001 Toyota Echo. It's got over 200,000 miles on it. This car starts up perfect. It starts driving okay. It's a stick shift, by the way.
Okay.
But then all of a sudden, it'll start missing in second or third gear. And fuel pressure is good on the car. We've changed the mass airflow sensors, new oxygen sensors. And just can't figure out what's causing this stumbling.
Okay. Well, you've gone through the fuel system, but what about the ignition system?
Well, we put in new plugs, too, and that doesn't seem to help it.
Okay. And no codes?
There was a code. It was a 170172. And we got rid of that. And now there's no codes at all.
Okay.
Okay.
I don't know where that noise is coming from, but if anytime you have a drivability problem, it's going to be spark or fuel, and you have to determine which one it is.
Uh-huh.
And so if
right. That's
what has to happen, if you want my opinion, I think you take a propane tank and run a long 10 feet of windshield wiper hose or vacuum hose from the end of the propane tank into the air filter, and it doesn't backfire at all, right?
No, it doesn't backfire.
Okay, all right.
It just starts stumbling.
Okay, so you run it into the air cleaner, and then when it starts stumbling and misfiring, then you open up the propane tank about three turns on the knob, and does that change anything? Are we running lean? Is that what we're doing? Are we going into a lean mix problem where we're only firing every other spark plug because we don't have enough fuel delivered to the whole engine? So if you use propane as a supplemental fuel into the air system and the problem goes away, then you have a fuel pressure problem. It could be the fuel pressure regulator. It could be the sock inside the fuel tank. It could be the filter. It could be a lot of things. But if you can't change it and it stays the same, then it's going to be an ignition problem. And in your Echo, it's crankshaft sensor, control module. Does it have a distributor or does it have coilover ignition?
No, it has coilover ignition.
Okay. And it could very well be one of the boots is bad or one of the spark plug porcelain is bad and there is spark jumping from the spark plug to the can that surrounds it. So did you use dielectric grease on any of those connections?
No.
Okay. Well, what I would do if I were you is I'd twist and pull the spark plug boots off the spark plug and just put about 3/8 of an inch of dielectric grease in the boot and then slide them all back on. The question then is better, worse, or the same? If it's better, you're on the right track. If it's worse, we're on the right track. And if it's the same, we're not, if that makes sense.
Okay, yes.
So the real question is, now, will it do 70, 80 miles an hour?
Yes.
Okay.
There's no problem with the performance as far as acceleration and all that. Yeah, we thought maybe it might be a catalytic muffler, but now it goes up to 80 miles an hour easy. But then it'll start sometimes, if you let the foot off the gas, it'll start like misfiring. So I'm not sure what it is. But.
Okay.
And then you put it back on, it goes back up, it's fine.
Okay. Well, it sounds as though you have an ignition problem, because if it'll do 80 miles an hour and it'll do that with good power and performance, then it's not fuel problem, because a substandard fuel would cause it to run fine at 65, and at 66 it starts stumbling, and then you can't make 70 because your foot's on the floor and you can't go any faster. The catalytic converter is the same symptoms. The catalytic converter will let you go up to a particular point, but then it's plugged up, and after that point, it's not going to run well. So this almost has to be an ignition problem, or it could be a mass airflow sensor problem, and it could be a mass airflow sensor is bad and given the wrong value to the computer, so therefore the computer's trimming back the fuel or advancing or retarding the spark. There's a lot of things that can be happening here, but mass airflow sensor might be suspect, and ignition connections at the coilover spark plugs could be an issue. Those are the two things you can look at yourself.
All right. Yeah, we've already replaced the mass airflow sensor not once, but twice. actually went and ordered one from Toyota and put that one in. That actually seemed to help it out a whole bunch.
Okay.
Putting in the
okay, but you all right? You said it's 200,000 miles. The hose from on either side of the mass airflow sensor has to be completely intact. So the hose from the air intake through the air filter, and then from the air filter through the mass air, and from the mass air into the engine. All of those connections have to be airtight. And if we're sucking air because one of the bellows has cracked and your 200,000-mile car is sucking air after the mass airflow sensor, boom, that's the problem.
Oh, okay, great. I'm going to check that out.
It has to be, the mass airflow sensor has to measure 100% of the air going into the engine. But if we have a leak between the mass airflow sensor and the intake manifold, then we have unmetered air. And at that particular point, it's going to have an intermittent miss because we're running lean. All righty. Good luck to you, George. Anybody else? 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. Larry Harker's Autos at 38th Avenue and Indian School. When I tell you he's got the skills to find and fix anything, he's a gray-haired guy. He's been around the block. He's one of me, one of us. He knows what BS smells like and looks like, and he has a fundamental knowledge about how a car works with compression, spark, and fuel delivery. So I can't tell you how many times I've sent people to Larry Harker's Auto, 38th Avenue and Indian School, been around since 1967, because I thought they could fix the car. And in each and every time, they have fixed the car. But they do oil changes and tire rotations and cooling system flushes and all that other stuff as well. But Larry Harker's Auto, 38th Avenue and Indian Schools, I'm really proud to recommend them. 34 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. When we talk about car repair shops, I think you'll find comfort in knowing that many of the shops that I recommend have been around since Jesus was a baby. Let's go over the list. Thompson's 1970 came into business. Larry Harker's been around since 67. Automatic Transmission Exchange, 68. Now, I am young compared to them because we first started in our business in 1979. So when you start talking about these guys that are 67, 68, and 70 that came into this business, they date me by a decade. So if you're interested in a transmission shop that's been around a long time, since 1968, Phil and his staff are experts in rebuilding transmissions, diagnosing transmissions, and fixing transmissions. So if you have a vibration, Monday mornings and Friday afternoons are kind of tough, but any other day of the week, you can stop by. And if you can demonstrate the vibration, they'd be happy to take a ride with you. That's Automatic Transmission Exchange, 40th Street in Washington. Manuel, good morning. How can I help you?
Hi, good morning. I called years ago about an intermediate problem I have with my 98 Chevy Silverado, which it only literally stopped working after the rain. Mm-hmm. So after it rained, it would just wouldn't turn, it just wouldn't start. So after years, I owned the truck for 21 years. That's why I still have it, because I'll have it forever.
Okay.
So what happened is that I kept going crazy. Like, I had fuel, spark, air, right? Fuel, fire. So after a lot of digging, I didn't know that Chevy had a pass lock security system, which I found out. So what turns out what happened is that, I guess it's called the Hall effect. So what was happening is that once I figured out, the light would stay on, the security light, which I never noticed that it stayed on. And when it stayed on, it would run for a few seconds and then it would die. So I just wanted to share because it drove me crazy for years. Because I have other vehicles, so it didn't matter if I wouldn't start, because a couple hours later, you know, it will clear up and it will run like nothing ever happened.
Right.
So I just wanted to share that because that drove me insane.
That ate your lunch. Just like those kinds of things eat all of our lunches. It's you either learn from your friends, you learn at the guys at the parts houses, or you just learn by hard knocks. And after you've replaced everything and you've done everything you can, and you still have an intermittent crank but no start problem, right?
Yes, and it drives because it's the 3 seconds. You know, I mean, like, literally, it'll start, boom, and they'll die. And I was like, what the? And yes. So I just wanted to share it because I've never really paid attention to the security light when it turns on. I don't know. You become so used to your own vehicle, right, that you don't notice.
Yep.
And then when it wouldn't start, and then I found this guy on a blog, and the guy's like, before you start changing the fuel pump again, because apparently he said, just check your security, the security light's on. And sure enough, the sucker's on. So when you could program the key again or reprogram it, and you leave it on for, 5 minutes, 10 minutes.
Right.
Light turns off, starts like a kitten, like nothing ever.
And it's that way. It's been fixed since then.
Yeah, well, I'm going to disable the security system since I really don't use. I parked the truck in behind a gate because now it's a work vehicle with other work vehicles.
Yeah.
So because I don't want to change the ignition because it's got the original key with the original. Oh no, it works everywhere, so I don't want to change the keys. But yeah, so now I know. Like it rained here in Phoenix when I remember a while back. And that's when I was when I discovered it. And then after I leave it on for a while, as soon as the light turns off, boom, it'll start right up.
Yeah. No, you're right. We don't have that anymore. Not that kind of thing.
No.
We do. We still have chips in the keys and stuff, but they're a little bit more sophisticated than the early. You said that this was a 98, so keep in mind this is almost 25 years old.
Yeah, I owned it for 21 years. I bought it in 2000.
Yeah,
so yeah, I know. But that's why I was going crazy because I'm like, I know this truck. You know,
yeah.
What are you doing this?
But here's the deal. It would have shut spark off. So if you got to the point where you could capture it and you could get somebody, crank it over, and before he starts cranking it, you pull the wire, stick an old spark plug in it, set it on the intake manifold, and then he cranks over, and there's no spark. That gives you your first hint because we're not going to shut fuel off on the passive crank. We're going to shut spark off. And,
oh, is that what it said? Because I had spark. The only thing, apparently, according to what I researched, it would shut off the injectors after like a few seconds.
Well, no, that's true. Fuel pressure and injector pulse is different.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Because we're going to send fuel pressure to the injectors, but we're not going to turn the injectors on and off.
Okay, but...
1 minute.
I just wanted it because it drove me nuts for years.
No. Thank you for calling. Thank you very much for calling. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And you know what? You're not the only one that's got bit by that snake. I can tell you we did too. When we were doing car work, in the 80s was the worst possible time to be working on cars because that's where all the newfangled crap came out. And we had stuff in there that was electronics and we just didn't understand. But I can put it all in one piece of paper. Today, you either have on or off, and everything is a number. One is off, five is on. One, five, on, off. One means your foot's not on the throttle, and five means your foot is on the throttle and it's wide open. So everything is now a number. Fuel delivery, engine vacuum. The engine's off is one. Five, your foot's on the floor. So that's how it works, but that's what we have to deal with is just the numbers, and you got to know exactly what you're looking at. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. You still got a chance because we got 20 minutes of this show left. 602-508-0960. Well, it's 44 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name's Mark Salem. Every Saturday we're here talking about car repair questions and problems and spark plugs and intake manifolds and brakes and ceramic pads and regular conventional brake pads and ceramic pads and semi-metallic pads for your car. What do I use? And most of the time the answer of that is whatever the book calls for. Now it's true that we're going to look at one book for your brake pads, but if we looked in 10 different brands of books, they're all going to say a semi-metallic pad or a conventional pad or a fulsome synthetic oil or whatever. So that's how it works. Let's go to Daryl. Daniel, I'm sorry. I mispronounced it. Daniel, good morning.
Okay, I'll be Daryl for you today if you want. But,
okay.
Hey, Mark, enjoying your show. Hey, quick question on 100 octane fuel or for an old-fashioned high compression engine.
Okay.
Any suggestions in the valley besides the 5 gallon buckets of the gold fuel?
What are you using it for, can I ask?
I've got an old 350 Chevy. It's got 11.5:1 compression I've been using just a octane booster with the 93 pump gas, but just wondering
is it rattling?
A little bit. I got the timing retarded significantly, so it's. But just wondering if any good gas besides the Sunoco type stuff? Or
no, when you're talking up in that range of octane, that you've enumerated the choices, but let me tell you what my take is on octane. Okay. Between regular and super, I have made many bets, and I've never lost one, that I can take your car out and you run it low on fuel, and I'll put fuel in it, and you won't be able to tell whether I have pump gas regular or super. You can't. Let me explain. When we talk about the explosion, we're talking about milliseconds of time. Milliseconds. And the difference between regular and super unleaded at the pump is this. One, on regular, one molecule ignites 10, and 10 ignite 100, and 100 ignite 1,000. Okay?
Okay.
So that's regular. Super, in an exaggerated format, one ignites two, two ignites four, four ignites six. So the burn time on super is maybe 1 to 2 milliseconds longer than regular. Milliseconds. So
okay.
We have the regular is more of a, in an exaggerated way, is more of a boom, where super's a boom.
Okay.
And in your particular case, how's the cooling system on your hot rod? Is it really good shape?
It runs hot.
Okay, like where?
It runs, yeah. So
I mean, but, where though? 220, 240, 250?
Oh, yeah. It's probably around 210, 220.
Okay, now, that's okay, though. That's not hot to me. That's okay. I don't care. And I have old cars, too. So I like 210 because water boils at 212, and I like that. So
okay.
Now, have you got a mechanical advance and a vacuum advance, or you got like an HEI distributor in there? What do you run on?
Both, yeah. An old-fashioned mechanical with points and condenser.
Okay. All right. Why don't you drop an why don't you put an HEI in there? It only
trying to keep it original. Would that help as far as that pre-ignition and...
I'm pretty sure that somebody, I know two or three guys in town, old gray-haired guys like me, that could probably time that just underneath the pinion point. We could still give you good idle, still give you good throttle, still give you everything, but just take away the pinion. We'd need it when it's warmed up good. But dwell affects timing, where timing doesn't affect dwell. So if you set those points at 30, then you have to set the timing right then and right there. Then we have to determine what the vacuum advance is going to give us and what the mechanical advance is going to give us, and we have to add all that in. So if you got 8 to start with, and let's pretend 10 and 10, so you got 28 degrees total advance. So why don't we put a little tighter springs in the mechanical advance and bring that down a little bit, and then voila, all of a sudden Daniel says, no more pinion. I can't really tell the difference on power and performance, but there's no more pinging off pump gas and maybe an octane booster. So what part of town do you live in?
Tempe.
Okay. I'd be happy to look at it for you if you wanted to. So you just call the office, and it's Salem. Just look up Salem Boys is the name of my shop, because I hate to use my name. But if you're in Tempe, you're close to me. I have a technician, Eddie, who's been with me 32 years. He's just going to laugh and say, what did Mark tell you?
Does he got gray hair, too?
He's got more than a couple of gray hairs. Eddie has got the very first bay there's 20 bays in the shop, and he's got the first one. It's called the Fishbowl Bay, right by where everybody looks through the windows out. And he has the ability. Now, does it have an EGR on the intake manifold?
No, it's old 60s vintage, so there's nothing.
Okay, because that would help us. If it was a newer model vintage and they had taken off the EGR and put a plate on it, we're going to put the EGR back in. Exhaust gas recirculation helps in the power performance and eliminates pinging, or it controls pinging. But that's okay if it's an older car. So the question is can we use the stock distributor, because we want to keep it as OE as we can? Can we put some springs in the stock distributor to help control the pinging? And I'm really sure he can. So you call and make an appointment, and then when you've made the appointment, email me mark@marksalem.com, mark Okay. At MarkSalem.com and tell me you've made an appointment. Tell me what your last name is, and then I'll call my daughter and make sure that that Eddie gets the car.
Okay.
And I think he can help you. I think he can help you.
Without going to any fancy high dollar racing.
We're not going to do that. Well, no, because it's fuel's cheaper. It's a matter of economics as far as I'm concerned.
Okay.
Fuel and this. Right. I'm thinking the least I think he might charge you is like
$9,999. Oh, no, that's okay.
Cents.
Under 10K.
Yeah,
that's okay.
Oh, wait, that was 99 cents. I'm sorry.
Oh,
I was looking
okay.
at the – they're queuing me on the computer screen. But yeah. I think the question is I'm having to run high-octane gas. Here's I'm giving you just exactly how I've got it timed. Is there something you can do to peel back the time just a little bit on the mechanical or centrifugal advance to take away the ping so I don't have to run? I'm happy running pump gas premium, but I'm not happy buying an octane booster or buying race gas. That's the answer.
Excellent.
Okay?
Okay.
All right, good luck
Thank
to you.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
You bet. Oh, this show isn't about me since 1988. I can go months and sometimes years without saying the name of my job. And that's why I always ask you where you live, because my intention is to send you to the shop that I know is a good shop where you live. And I have so many people in this industry that are just really, really good friends of mine, and we're all gray-haired guys. We all were born and raised on points and condenser, and we've gone through the distributor changes and the fuel injection changes and mass airflow sensors and all kinds of computers. We know that. But like the back of our hand, we know that. Every once in a while, we get bit by some off-brand car that came from Korea that does something completely different, and we'll have to, you know, kind of help one another out, but that's how it works. Who's on the phone next?
Let's say hello to Tom.
Tom, good morning.
Hey, good morning. I actually know where you can buy some pump racing fuel.
Oh, perfect. Perfect. Tell me.
It's out there near the Lone Butte Casino on Tyreen Road. There's a gas station there next to the casino, and that's kind of near Firebird Raceway, where they have the Firebird Lake and all the racing activities, and they have a pump there where you can pull up and get, I think it's either 98 or 100 octane right there at the pump, and it's the price is a little pricey, but I think a lot of these race teams go over there and fill up their tanks and stuff.
Okay, so you're talking about that Chevron station that's just south of the 101 and Price, which is where the casino's at.
Exactly.
Okay. So, Daniel, I hope you're still listening, but you'd head from Tempe, you'd head southbound on Kyrene, you'd go over the 101, the casino would be on your left, you would continue to the stop sign with the flashing light, there's a Chevron across the street on the corner, and they sell high-octane gas out of the pump. And you're absolutely right, because I've seen it. Actually, I have one of Tom, I have one of those apps on my phone that tells me the cheapest fuel. And so
yeah.
I'm kind of anal
that's
about
not
that.
One of them.
And oftentimes they have the cheapest diesel. So from our office down to my house, I can go down Kyrene and grab that fuel there at the Chevron station. But no, that's thank you for that. Thank you for calling in, and thank you very much. So hopefully, Daniel, you'll know it's on Price in the 202 South. There's a Chevron station about 2-3 blocks south of the 202 on Kyrene. And it is Kyrene. I said Price, but it's not. It's Kyrene. And so Kyrene and the 202 just south. Well, we've given you all the information we can give you. We've had as much fun. If I offended you, I'm sorry. And if you need a personal apology, then give me a call and I'll consider that. We don't talk about Chevys and Fords and which is better and all that other kind of stuff. We just talk about cars and wives' tales and stuff that just still permeates our industry today that isn't true and hasn't been true in 5 or 10 years. I graduated high school in 1972. I started working at a gas station in 1968. And I've been in the car business ever since then, with a small 6-year, 7-year stint at the Scottsdale Police Department, where I thought maybe I could make it a career, but you know, I love cars more than anything else in the world. So I went in, and then I came out and opened a mobile station in Ahwatukee,
And in Ahwatukee in those days in 1979, the Circle K was first. My gas station was second. And then Hank's and Millie's Hallmark was third. And so it was like after that is how Ahwatukee and Mountain Bark Ranch grew. So there's lots of guys. Chuck Nide from Automotive Dynamics up north. He's been around a long time. Tom at Action Auto Repair. He sold me one of my first analyzers back in when I was in the gas station business in the early 80s. Kurt's Auto Repair, he's been around since 1987. I've known and admired Kurt's for a long time before we ever met and shook hands. And then you've got guys like Tom Blackwell. If you know Tom Blackwell, him and I are a lot alike because we're both pretty doggone ornery. And both of us think we know everything there is to know about cars. And every once in a while, somebody will teach us that we don't. And we'll never admit it. Thompson's has been around since 70, but in reality, the family's been around since the mid-60s. So when you look at that kind of progress, Harker's, again, been around since 1967, and Automatic Transmission since 1968. I was a freshman in high school when Phil was at Automatic Transmission Exchange. That's how long ago it was. So nevertheless, these are good guys. They've been around a long time. You should be wary of spending a lot of money at a repair shop that's brand new, where every time you take it in, it's a large repair that may include numerous operations. And that means that typically they don't know if it's a spark problem or a fuel spark problem, so they're going to replace all the ignition components and flush your fuel injectors. And they're hoping that this shotgun approach will fix your car. That's stuff that you probably want to avoid. And then you want to avoid anybody who's just chest thumping themselves to death, because I think it's a real it's real obvious to all of us in the industry that while we have a good shop, there's others out there that are every bit as good as ours, and if not better in certain aspects of car repair. So I can tell you right now, there's a lot of shops in this valley that do other parts of cars a lot better than we do. We don't do upholstery. We don't do paint. We don't do exhaust. We don't do a lot of those kinds of ancillary stuff. But when it comes to tuning up an old hot rod, a vintage car, then just about everybody on my list could pull that off. So we've all been there. We all were born and raised on points and condensers on 283, 265, 283, 327, 350, and 400 small block Chevys. And those are all the cubic inches we've had. So nevertheless, my email address is mark@marksalem.com, mark@marksalem.com. My website's marksalem.com. And you're welcome to leave me a message. Or if you do, would you leave me a phone number so I can call you so we don't have to spend the rest of our lives texting back and forth. I'm Mark Salem. I'll see you next Saturday right here on KKNT 960.